Good day, Internet.
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 Good day, Andrew. Good day, Internet. How are you?
Good day. Good day, Tom and Internet.
Little did we know that Andrew Heaton is the Internet.
Mm-hmm. I like to keep it close to my chest, but I am the Internet.
We all do it because you end your show, I'm Andrew Heaton, and so are you. I've been Andrew Heaton, and so have you, because we're all the Internet, and so are you.
Yeah, exactly.
The logic is unassailable, I'm sure, somewhere.
Through the transitive property, we're all the Internet.
That's right. All right, let's get to something I'm better at, the Daily Tech News Show. Here we go. In 3, 2... This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Andrew Bradley, Dale Mulcahy, and Matt Zaglin. Coming up on DT&S, using brain scans to settle trademark disputes, a U.S. Supreme Court case that could stop you from liking Reddit posts, and Andrew Heaton let AI models do an episode of his podcast. Talk about how it went. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, February 13th, Galentine's Day. 2023 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And we are very pleased to have the host of The Political Orphanage with us today, Andrew Heaton. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Delighted to be here. I'm coming from Edinburgh, Scotland.
How is Edinburgh right now?
It's really nice. We actually had the sun today. It was cool but sunny, which is my favorite weather, as opposed to foreboding and brooding, which is what they prefer during winter. So it was very nice.
Yeah, so very, very un-Scotland-like in many ways, but enjoyable.
It was Scotland light today. It was very nearly Ireland. It was like Scotland plus hope.
All right, let's start with the quick hits.
Germany's Deutsche Telekom, France's Orange, Spain's Telefonica, and the UK's Vodafone previously proposed creating a joint venture to operate a cross-operator ad-targeting infrastructure focused on first-party data. The European Commission Antitrust Division ruled that this venture did not spark competition concerns, giving it the green light to proceed. The carriers say that this ad tech infrastructure will require explicit consent from subscribers to use personal data. The European Commission also said, even as it cleared the venture to proceed, data protection rules are fully applicable.
They didn't suspend them somehow. Opera posted a demo video showing a ChatGPT-powered sidebar tool integrated into the browser. So, yes, they are going to put it in Opera. The demo showed it generating a bulleted summary of a web page. This shorten feature is going to launch in browsers very soon, they say. Opera also said it's working on AI-powered features to augment browsing, with plans to add popular AI-generated content services to the sidebar. So things are coming, is how I interpret all of that. Microsoft began rolling out access to its stuff on the waitlist for the new Bing with ChatGPT integration. Currently, Microsoft limited the rollout to desktop Bing, saying they don't have their mobile experience quite ready just yet.
The security camera company Arlo had previously announced that its end-of-life policy will go into effect on January 1st, 2023, which would result in out-of-support cameras losing access to free 7-day cloud storage of camera recordings. The first model will go end-of-life on April 1st. CEO Matthew McRae announced on Twitter that Arlo will not remove free storage for any existing customers and will extend the end-of-life dates a further year. McRae also committed to providing security updates until 2026. Arlo previously announced it would end other features for older cameras, including email notifications and E911 emergency calling, so it's still unclear if these were extended as well.
The VR headset maker Big Screen announced the Beyond. It is a PC-only headset with two 5K 90Hz OLED displays and weighs just less than 6 ounces. How did the company get the weight down? Well, dieting, exercise, and it doesn't contain knobs for fittings or diopters, instead offering customer custom fits through a face scan. So you do that on your iPhone, and then you use custom prescription lenses in the headset. It also uses Steam VR base stations for tracking, so that puts a lot of stuff outside the headset as well. And it requires an optional audio strap for built-in headphones. It does not come with controllers, but works with anything supported on Steam VR. And if you're interested, after knowing all of those things that you have to take advantage of, it's available for pre-order now for $999. Shipping it to the United States in Q3 and Canada and Europe in Q4.
According to a study by Marketplace Pulse, Amazon's average cut on each merchant sale surpassed 50% for the first time in 2022. This included Amazon's sale commission as well as optional logistics servers and advertising on Amazon itself. Marketplace Pulse began sampling seller transactions back in 2016, so it's been doing it for a while. Previously found that while sellers paid more to Amazon per transaction each year, this was largely offset by new customers and strong annual sales increases. However, 2022 saw Amazon's slowest ever sales growth.
They're just taking a lot more money. What's unusual about that? All right, let's talk about trademark cases. Tech may be able to help determine them in a way that involves scanning your brain. Trademark infringement cases are a little tricky. You have to prove in court that two brands would confuse a reasonable person, but there's no metric standard reasonable person. Some cases are pretty obvious. I can call my laundry detergent Linux because no one is likely to confuse laundry detergent with the operating system Linux. But I can't call my computer company Microsoft since people might think I mean the Microsoft started by Bill Gates. I have to pick a different name if I have a computer company. There are, however, edge cases. One of the most famous, Apple put out a music product called Apple Music. And even just before that, iTunes. And there was a record company started by the Beatles called Apple. That one went back and forth for decades. Apple ended up finally winning in the end. A judge has to decide in these cases based on the evidence. But the evidence is usually really biased. Plaintiffs' surveys are the most common way. And they always lean one way or another. Plaintiffs' surveys always find there's confusion. Defendant surveys never find confusion. A 2019 paper from the Georgia Law Review found that just subtle changes to wording in these surveys can significantly impact responses. So there's no standard for the survey. But perhaps there is a better way involving brains.
Yeah, marketing professor at the University of Virginia, Zihao Zhang, wrote a piece in The Conversation describing why he decided to try scanning the brain to look for evidence of trademark confusion. Zhang published his team's finding in a paper in the journal Science Advances. They relied on an effect called petition suppression, where a brain response becomes weaker the more times it responds to the same thing, basically tuning things out. They showed subjects pairs of images from supposedly infringing brands, and if they were perceived as similar, the response to the second one should be weaker. So, Tom, what did they find?
Yeah, they compared the MRI results to three surveys. They had one that favored the plaintiff, one that favored the defendant, and then one that was fairly neutral. And Zhang found brain-based measures reliably matched the most neutral survey results. They were able to tell pretty well when there was confusion and when there wasn't. As stated in the paper, this could, quote, inform the reasonable person test of trademark infringement. Now, the researchers cautioned this is not the final word. There's lots of factors that go into trademark infringement. A judge would use this as one factor to determine if there was brand confusion. At least they could. Heaton, I know you're the son of a judge. How does this idea of just doing a quick MRI on a few people to solve a trademark case strike you?
This strikes me as a kind of boring sequel to Minority Report, where they're using this technology in order to assuage trademark disputes. I'm all in favor of it. I think it'd be lots of fun, but I'm curious as to how they're going to wheel it into the courtroom. That seems like pretty big equipment.
I guess they'd have to do an order, right? To say like, okay, there must be an association that will go and test a random sample of people, measure their brains, and see what the confusion rating is. But that sounds expensive.
I would think that it would wind up being kind of similar to the way the surveys you mentioned are right now, where the defense and the prosecutors would hire teams to go do it. Hopefully the technology would allow them to do it in such a way that it's less biased and less easy to tinker with. I don't know, because it probably depends on how they set up that test. But I would assume that's something that'll wind up coming out of the pocket of the defense of the legal teams themselves.
Yeah, who pays for it is going to be the legal teams. And then it becomes questionable, you know, are you getting unbiased results? Unless we develop an industry where there's, you know, independent MRI scanning people. I guess if we started using this for other tests of a reasonable person, there's lots of examples of a reasonable person. If you could scan the brain and be able to independently verify, like, yeah, no, they think that's the same thing. If you could use that in other situations, then maybe that causes an industry to spring up.
It could be. Let us hope that we don't suddenly combine the warm and cuddliness of lawyers with the pricing mechanisms of the health insurance industry. That would be, I think, a really bad confluence of factors to go into effect, but it could be.
Yeah. One of the ideas they brought up in this paper was negligence cases or obscenity cases. Is this offensive to the community kind of cases? You could see, again, show people a scan and know what the brain looks like when it's offended, which sounds silly, but you could do that and then see if these things are considered obscene or not with a more objective view.
So it would kind of be like scientifically verifying the I can't define porn, but I know it when I see it. Like, we'd be able to have an actual MRI litmus test of he saw porn.
Yeah.
Like, that's for sure. He's not lying.
Or he saw offensive porn.
Right.
More particularly. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. As opposed to innocuous porn.
Yeah. And we could define a new category with that.
Not going to touch that one. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing two cases soon that could impact Section 230 of the U.S. Communications Decency Act. We talk about Section 230 on the show a lot, but just a reminder, it protects internet platforms from liability for what you post on the platform. Arguments in one of these cases, Gonzalez versus Google, begins February 21st. Technologyreview.com has been highlighting this case. Go read the full articles to get the full picture, but let's do a little TLDR.
Yeah, Section 230 says that internet services will not be treated as a publisher of information created by others. Before Section 230 existed, the law was interpreted to mean you could either not moderate at all and then not be liable for anything posted, or if you moderated, you became liable for everything posted. If you're liable for everything posted, you're going to be really strict about what you allow to be posted. Section 230 lets a platform engage in moderation without being on the hook for everything you post, so they don't have to screen every post before it goes up. However, there are exemptions to the protection. One exemption is that if the platform itself creates a post, it's responsible for it. If Facebook wrote something, Facebook is responsible for it, just like anybody would be responsible for what they write. Another of exemptions is if the post is criminal, then the platform has a responsibility to remove it. Gonzalez versus Google argues that YouTube violated the Anti-Terrorism Act when its algorithm promoted content created by Daesh, aka ISIS. The court will address whether recommendations of content are the same as the display of content. If recommendations are no different than displaying content, then Section 230 applies. And YouTube would then be off the hook. However, if recommendations are not the same as simply displaying it, then what are they? How the court answers that could have widespread implications for how the internet works.
And remember, not all algorithms are the same. An algorithm lets you sort posts chronologically, geographically, alphabetically. An algorithm can also show you posts it thinks you'll like. They're all algorithms. They just do different things. Reddit filed an amicus brief explaining that its moderation approach relies on upvotes and downvotes, which are used to help determine what rises to the top. And that's determined by an algorithm.
Yeah, it may not be a recommendation algorithm per se, but it's counting the likes and the not likes and then deciding where on the page to display that. So it is an algorithm that's doing this. This is coming. We've talked about it on the show a couple of times. It's a chance for us to remind you that it's coming in a couple of weeks. We won't get a decision. It'll just be the hearing. Heaton, I don't know if you've been following this much. What's your impressions of this?
Well, I'm really interested in how they're interpreting 230 in this instance. It's not that they're claiming that the algorithm prioritized something and therefore was violating neutrality, but rather that the recommendation itself constituted posting something in violation of 230 because it was criminal, i.e. Daesh?
There's a couple of ways they're trying to get the court to rule. One would be to say, like, hey, that's criminal content. And so when they recommended it, they were recommending criminal content. The court would have to decide that recommendation was closer to display in order to count it as criminal. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, well, they got around to taking it down. They just didn't get around fast enough. There's actually a similar case involving Twitter that's going to test that part of it as well. But this is really about do you cross the line out of your protections if you recommend something? Is that different than just displaying it?
First of all, the thing I'm most curious about is if there is some sort of saving grace time delay type thing where you've got, you know, 3 hours to notice that you've accidentally posted something or allowed something to be posted on your website that's criminal. I assume those statutes are in there. But otherwise, it's kind of an interesting ideological breakdown. I don't think I would see this as terribly different. I wouldn't on my end, unless somebody gave me a really persuasive position. I wouldn't put selecting something algorithmically as the same thing as posting it outside of 230.
Yeah, I mean the Section 230 part that's applicable is pretty short. It basically says no internet service provider shall be treated as the publisher of things posted by somebody else. If you're being very literal, then it doesn't matter if you show it in a different way. Like that's still not you being a publisher. It's just how you're displaying it. But it's hard to tell how this court is going to rule.
Right. Well, I'd also like you think about how hard are they leaning into that algorithm. So with YouTube, presumably there's a little thing at the bottom that's like, you liked this video, so you might like this beheading video from Daesh. So it's very direct, right?
Yeah.
But as you all pointed out a moment ago, some algorithms might just, it could just be in alphabetical order. It could be in chronological order. There's still some sort of preference mechanisms that are there. So if you have a weaker algorithm that nonetheless is collating things outside of chronology or alphabetizing, then would that also qualify?
Yeah. And is the court going to get into the business of that, right? If they're saying like, okay, you can't be treated as the publisher of things as an internet service platform, but we're going to decide that once you start telling someone, if you like this, you like that, that's content. Now you are the publisher the way you would be if you wrote a post yourself, and the recommendations are the content of your post. Possibly, I could see a niche where they, you know, a little opening where someone might write an opinion that points to responsibility that way. I don't know.
I'd be a lot more swayed for that kind of thing when it comes to platforms being neutral than I would for it actually constituting content.
Yeah.
That to me is just a shortcut for finding some way to prioritize things.
Yeah.
I'm not too bothered by that. But you could make an argument in terms of neutrality.
And Section 230 has nothing to do with neutrality. All Section 230 is saying is, hey, if you're moderating stuff, we're not going to punish you for that. Even if some of your stuff is wrong, it's the person who posted it in the first place that is responsible for it. It's really right. Not contemplating neutrality or perspective. In fact, all it's saying is like, you can tilt this whatever direction you want. That's beyond our purview. We're just saying, if you go in and start tilting, you're not suddenly responsible for the things you do let up. Well, folks, if you have a thought about something on the show, but you don't know our email address, here it is. Email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. ChatGPT is being used to write everything from technical manuals to code, cover letters, and resumes. Justin Robert Young even uses it to write his podcast show notes. But could it write a whole show? Andrew Heaton decided to find out and had it write an episode of The Political Orphanage. Heaton, what inspired you to try that?
So I did an episode with you and our friend Darren Kitchen on ChatGPT. I was really interested in ChatGPT specifically from the angle of automation and rendering jobs obsolete. That tends to be the thing people freak out about, at least with previous technologies. And so I wanted to see, how long do I have before I become obsolete? Can I retire? Do I need to move back in with my parents preemptively? When are podcast hosts specifically going to be made obsolete? So I ended up doing a full bonus episode on my program of this particular content where I fed in prompts to ChatGPT, then stitched together an entire script. And then I used a service called Descript to overdub my voice. So I didn't record any of it, but it sounds like me. It's a robot doing a very good Heaton impression, and had it run through there. And and that's basically what I wanted to see. How good is it compared to me?
Now, how detailed did you get? Did you break down elements of the show? Did you give it segments? Did you do it all at once?
Yes. At least when I was playing with ChatGPT, you are limited in terms of the total word count of the answers that it gives. I think it's 500 words or something like that. So I had to do it in bits and pieces. And so I said, like, and I would give it very specific directions. So I'd say, you know, do an introduction to the show, but be sure to include "Welcome to the Political Orphanage, a home for plucky misfits and problem solvers." That way, there was some regularity there. So I did slightly massage it that way. Same with the ending, but I gave it segments. I even had it do jokes. I do comedic advertisements on my program regularly, and I was real curious to see, can it replace comedians? And so I told it, write jokes for a whimsical product designed for horses. And had it write that out for me.
And how much of your actual voice do you think it got right?
It was pretty. It's pretty good. I'm very much impressed with overdub with Descript. The bits that are noticeable at this point are any words that aren't super common. The syllable will be the wrong intonation. And so or if it's any word that's a proper noun that's not really specific in the dictionary. So I don't know if we're talking about like Star Trek characters or something that Tom and I would clearly know, the service might not have it. And it'll say like Garak instead of Garrick or something like that. But even with more kind of normal words that are secondary or tertiary, it'll kind of mess up on that. But overall, I'd say it does a fairly good job with Descript, because you're just putting in a script and you can have it say whatever you want. You can kind of get around that, where theoretically, if I had like a really bad cold or I was incapacitated vocally for a while, I could put in a script there, listen to it and go, oh, it's not able to get that name down. It can't get Tom. I'll have it say, you know, Tim or whatever the thing is. You kind of work around it. But the pronunciation's pretty good. I think it'll get much better.
So we're all out of work soon.
Well, here's the thing. It wasn't very good. The ChatGPT was like a very, like, if you didn't know what I was up to, you would have just thought, man, Heaton really phoned it in today. Like, this is Heaton's either quit taking his testosterone supplements or he's hungover or something. He is not bringing the heat today. It was all right, but it was very boilerplate. It lacked the pith and it lacked the zing. I pride myself in being substantive but funny, and part of my job is being an engaging entertainer in addition to bringing ideas to people. ChatGPT was serviceable if it was writing an essay for English class or something like that. It's fine for that. If you're just spitting out ad copy or just copy, the humor was a little off. The ways that I would have prioritized were a little off. And then it did have bizarre clinks in it where it would go, let's face it, something, something, something horse joke. Let's face it, something, something, something next horse joke. Let's face it.
It
had a kind of uncanny valley effect. So I'm not sweating it. I think I've at least got, I think something else will do me in career-wise much before the robots get me. I think I'm much more likely for something bad to happen in another sector than for the robots to happen. It's interesting. I think that what's going to happen with podcasting is not that it's going to put us out of a job. I think what's going to happen is basically it's just going to expand the scope quite a lot. So friends that I have that are journalists that write articles and write blogs that aren't podcasters, I think the technology is going to get to the point very soon where they also have overdubbed voices. The second they post something on the website, it puts it out as a podcast with their voice, them never having read it out loud. And so you'll find that a lot of the writers you like will suddenly have a quote unquote podcast. They'll sound a tad bit robotic. That's where I see it going in the immediate future, but I'm not really worried about it right now. It's not quite able to get that human je ne sais quoi that you need to remain engaging with your audience.
As we engage with these more and more, I feel like those kinds of uncanny valleys are coming more often than we expected. I mean, we always talk about the uncanny valley with robots, but you're pointing about one with creativity, with emotion, with expression, that I think we're going to run into those walls and be like, ah, it's just really hard for it to get past that and sound perfectly natural. It's serviceable for stuff, but it can't really replicate us.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right about that. I mean, one of the great things about ChatGPT, and I think why it is a game changer for search engines and Google, is that it's very good at analyzing lots of data and concisely giving you what you want, which is great if you need research or a recipe or directions or something like that. That's absolutely fantastic, because what it's doing is it's saving you the irritation of wading through multiple options or watching a YouTube video or going having to scoop away all the ads and swat them away. But when you're doing creative stuff specifically, I am not relaying information as concisely and quickly as I can. Part of what we're doing is packaging things in a way that are engaging, that are fun. It might be lyrical. It might be comedic. That's going to take a while. Even then, I do think that you're going to see like AI augmented comedy very soon, like very, very soon. If I were writing for a late night show where I had to produce a ton of jokes all the time, a lot of the time there are events that we're all going to have to talk about. So I don't know, the British Prime Minister trips and falls down the stairs, and it's a really funny video. Well, you know, every single late night show is going to talk about that. So you might have a situation where you go to ChatGPT and say, write 50 jokes about the Prime Minister falling down the stairs. Most of them aren't going to be very funny. Maybe one of them's funny in and of itself. Maybe one of them might get there. But it wouldn't be like you'd fire all the writers. It would be more like just it's kind of giving them ammunition to use or being like a crutch that they can use. And
it's
hopefully
an
we'll let them do something else.
Yeah, an aid or a tool or something like
that. Yeah, an aid, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right, let's check out the mailbag before we get out of here.
Let's do it. Joao in Lisbon wanted to share his experience with Prometheus. That's being AI's beta. Joao says, I decided to ask Prometheus to write a good morning greeting for my team Slack channel. Prometheus gave me three greetings that included some info of the day type information. One of the options said it was Valentine's Day, but that was wrong because this was asked around 6 a.m. GMT on February 13th, not 14th. I asked Prometheus why it told me it was Valentine's Day, and it responded by saying it was February 14th in some places on Earth.
Okay.
When I asked what places, it was already February 14th. It gave me a list of places which were all incorrect. For example, Tokyo, Japan. When I asked for the date and time for Tokyo, Japan, it gave me the correct date and time, contradicting the information it just gave me one prompt earlier. I was disappointed by this failure, but used Bing's feedback options to explain all of this to Microsoft. Hope they can fix the bug and improve Prometheus's accuracy and consistency. By the way, Joao let us know that this entire email was composed with Prometheus using similar prompts, which I would not have known.
Yeah.
Because I don't know Joao. You know, it's maybe he just talks like a bot.
The only tip off was that the font, the typeface was unusual, which we knew he had copied it from the ChatGPT. I was like, oh, that's the ChatGPT typeface.
So I'm going the whole long way about this. I need to try to automate listeners. That's what I should be doing, automating the listeners so that I'm not beholden to them. This is very, very clever.
Right, right. It's an end around to the system. Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. Thank you, Joao, for not only sharing your experience with us, but using the tool to save you the time it took to share the experience with us. I'm curious how much time it saved him if he had to put in the prompts to say, make sure to mention this, make sure to mention that. That's good stuff.
It's good stuff. If you have good stuff for us, send it to feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Thanks to you, Andrew Heaton, for being with us today and sharing your ChatGPT experiences. Let folks know where they can keep up with the rest of your work.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to be here. I host a program called The Political Orphanage, so-called, because I am not catering to red team or blue team, and encourage anybody that wants to get fun, nonpartisan political content, give it a try, The Political Orphanage.
Thanks also to our brand new boss, and that boss's name is Wade.
Wade
just started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Wade.
You know, we couldn't do this show today without Wade and everyone like him. So be like Wade if you're not already. Patreon.com/DTNS. Wade on in.
Speaking of patrons, stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet. We roll right into it when DTNS concludes. But you can catch our show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2100 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're back doing it all again tomorrow with Brian Brushwood joining us. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Folks, if you're watching or listening live, make sure to hop on over to showbot.tv/DTNS2 and either submit on or vote or both a title like We Are All the Internet, which makes us all Andrew Heaton. Scotland and Hope is another title. Get over there, showbot.tv/DTNS2. I'm fascinated now after our conversation, Heaton, about this. I've been wondering, like, okay, I imagine that ChatGPT has a limit. What is that limit going to be? And that feels like a very familiar limit for technology of like, yeah, it does a pretty good job, but I could just tell it wasn't me. It just doesn't quite get intonations. Those are the kinds of things that I think get exponentially harder to replicate.
I think you're right about that. I was talking to one of my friends yesterday about the issues of automation. And one, we talked about this on the Political Orphanage when you came on. Most of the AI technology that we're seeing come out over the last couple of decades didn't so much eliminate jobs as eliminate drudgery. There were jobs that were eliminated. That does happen. But like Photoshop didn't make artists go away. Excel didn't eliminate accountants. They're all still there. So I think that already the fears of automation are a bit overstated. But in terms of the things that are most safe from automation, creativity, things that involve human touch, and things that involve being physically local. So at least until we've got 3D printed buildings and construction sites, until something like that happens or everything becomes prefabricated, there's going to be need for people working in construction, as it's hard to just import things whole cloth. I don't think you're ever going to see tattoo artists or hairstylists go away. Tattoo artists, I think you probably could automate, incidentally. I think you probably could figure out a way to put your leg inside of something and have it like 3D print the tattoo. But I don't think people will want to do that. I think that for my friends that do tattoos, it's almost like a religious ritual. There's it's so intimate. I doubt it's going to happen. And I don't want to put my head in some kind of robot bowl and have a robot with a bunch of blades. Even if it's the safest thing in the world, I don't want the robot to come near my face with blades. So that's going to be fine. And then when you get into like creative stuff, I think that's fairly safe.
So you don't want to invest in my VC startup that's going to be a tattoo bot that you strap onto your face, leg, or arm, and that would tattoo you based with clip art. That's not ideal for. Okay,
I will invest in your face robot tattoo art machine if nothing else, so I can attend board meetings. That sounds awesome. I want to meet the other people you convinced to invest in this venture, Rich.
I think. There's so many things we jump to conclusions about with this stuff, and I'm fully on board with all of your limitations, except that one about like I don't want a robot with a bunch of blades around my head really does sound like the guy is like, you'll never get me into an automobile, I'm safe on my horse, you know, like it seems these sorts of things seem like ridiculous ideas until they become common, and then someday and I'm not saying I'm any different than you about the blades on my head, but someday you and I will be like trying to find an old fashioned human barber while all the kids are like, just use the helmet. It's perfectly safe.
Ooh, you got to use that.
The barber will either be like an extreme luxury position or alternately like a disappearing profession, like shoeshine boy, where you have to go to Philadelphia. You're like, no, there's a barber in Philadelphia. If you go to their train station, they still have a barber there actually.
But then it opens up the creative aspect of it where the barber actually becomes a hair designer. And that becomes what differentiates. You're selling like your hair designs and stuff like that, as opposed to doing the, like, I can only do one haircut at a time. I'm only limited to the, you know, $20 to $30 or whatever I get for a haircut. Yeah.
I believe what will happen if you can do kind of personal grooming to a high level of of satisfaction for the customer. You could combine formerly separate occupations. You could be a therapist slash hairdresser. So while the machine works on you, you already have them laying down. Why not talk? I mean, hairdressers and their clients already talk. Why not just take it to someone who's licensed and maybe can give you some useful advice?
I get drugs from mine already. So why couldn't we just make them legal drugs with some kind of prescription?
You just cut out the middleman.
It's a time saver.
Yeah, at the very least.
Regenerative, I've been thinking about it in terms of craft for the longest time in that, that's what feels like what changes, right? Where people have invested a lot of time in learning a craft that allows them to generate like a specific, like their creative vision, right? So it's like, if you wanted to be a visual artist, you needed to have the craft of painting, right? Which involved the craft of paint mixing, which involves all these different other crafts. And as we've gotten into digital or more autonomous systems, there's been a fundamental change, obviously, in what that craft entails, but it's still to get to that creative output. And that is still primarily what you're like, that's the challenge, right? We can develop these tools that simplify this kind of intentionality to output, but you still need to have that intentionality to begin with, which I don't think changes right now based on what I've seen from ChatGPT.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think that like I use Fiverr periodically. I don't think Photoshop or any of those other ones have eliminated the people on them. I've never had to work with fonts before, but for my friends that predate computers, they tell me that like fonts were incredibly difficult to work with 30 years ago. If you needed to make a sign or something, you had to know, maybe there's what trigonometry's for. I've never figured out what trigonometry's for. Maybe it was making signs prior to computers and rockets to kill Russians and things. I don't know. But it's not like that happened and no one makes stuff anymore. It eliminated the drudgery for them.
And I really keep going back to the uncanny valley thing, but it was just something I have never quite put my finger on, because I was like, oh, there'll always be the, people like handmade chairs kind of thing. But I think there is something specifically to voice and video where the movements will be precise and accurately replicating human movements and human tones of voice, but there will be something that our brains go, yeah, but they keep saying, let's face it, or the tone isn't quite variable in the right way. And it's a thing our brains can recognize that we don't know how to train machines to recognize and compensate for.
So my very good friend Josh Jennings is worried that it's actually going to go the other direction.
Oh, really?
He's got a son that is on TikTok all the time. I'm not on TikTok very much, but I gather that there's some kind of thing where you put in a prompt and it goes, my brother had a duck tonight or something. It's always this very, it's a very, very bright voiced woman.
Yes, yes, yes. People, there's a few of them, but the bright voiced woman voice is very popular. I know.
Right.
What you're talking
and
about.
It's a robot, right?
Yeah.
And it's so bright. Like it's just, I'm going to get a cupcake later. Like it's very like that.
And I just put purple on this cupcake. Yeah.
Right. And his son will now talk like that. When he's being like partly to be funny, but Jennings will be like, talk like a human. Like he like it's what his fear is.
Isn't that the modern equivalent of like, don't do that. Your face will get stuck like that.
Talk like a human.
It's interesting because there were some complaints, not a lot, but it was only noted because it was such an odd thing that some parents in different countries were complaining that their kids were losing their whatever national accent was because so many of the YouTube videos they watched featured Americans, or at least people with American accent in English. And in rare cases, I know a couple of my daughter's friends who watched Peppa Pig picked up certain British pronunciation for certain words that they got from watching Peppa Pig because it was just a constant rotation. I could totally see someone picking up a very synthesized or manufactured voice because they've been exposed for it too long, and they assume that's how you pronounce certain words.
The humans being more like robots.
What do you mean, Sarah?
I don't know.
But I also think even if that were to happen in the extreme, there are things we do as human speakers that are just natural and we won't change. It's not like we'll change every aspect of our diction to be robotic.
Everything is going to end with a curse word. That's how you know you're human.
Someone's gonna link to like a thing from like the 19th century where they're like the kid. Well, the kids are talking in their telegraph language. I mean, that's okay, right?
Oh,
right. I'm going back to that. Yeah.
In the newspapers of the 1800s, there were debates about people using initialisms and slang and how it was, you know, it was ruining the ability of the youth to think because they were using all these crazy phrases like okay. Instead of speaking English.
Oh, the amount of like technophobia that persists in every time period. It's like people were afraid of the bicycle. I don't remember why, but they thought the bicycle was like either kind of like
it was bad for you. It was bad for your body, something.
Yeah, and like people were terrified of elevators. Like there was literally a thing called elevator disease where it was thought some people couldn't.
I'm still afraid of elevators, but yeah.
Yeah, which actually kind of get like back in the day, if you'd never heard of an elevator before, and someone's like, "Hey, well, no, it's great." They take a room that you can't get out of. By the way, you go into this little room. It's like kind of like a box. You go into this room, and it's on a rope, and they pull it to the very top of the building. You'd be like, "This is a death trap. I'm not going to get in that." Like, I
That's
get why.
Literally, what I think.
Like
every time I get into an elevator, it's a curse. Yeah, but I think there was elevator disease, like that you would catch from being in elevators.
Well, they thought that certain people would not be able to handle the speed or the altitude or something of it, like kind of an altitude sickness. And it would appear in retrospect, given that no one has this today, that there was never really that, but there was some sort of psychosomatic manifestation of the fear of being in an elevator.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, I feel like in 50 years we'll see the ironic papers of you know, when we were publishing, you know, the radiation figures coming off our phones and that, you know, that was a scare. Mm-hmm. Like people forget that.
Right.
And not to say that there aren't health concerns with electronics. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying I want wearables everywhere. I'm just saying there's no evidence that cell phones do anything with.
Yeah, but you'd see doctored photos of like tumors that looked exactly like a flip phone on it. So, like I remember those. It was, yeah.
They were always LG, never Samsung.
But there's the technophobia, and then there's just being old. So like this is something that I'm trying to fight wherever I can. In me, I try to fight it. Like a couple of years ago, some kids were playing Pokemon cards in the cafe or so. I don't remember. And I went into old man mode. I was like, back in my day, we had baseball cards. I don't like your brightly colored. And then I thought about it, and I was like, they're playing with their friends. It's more interactive. There's better artwork. It's not just a bunch of dudes holding a bat. Like it clearly, this is better than collecting baseball cards by any metric whatsoever. I am being old. Enjoy your Pokemon. I didn't say any of this. This is all in my head. But this
and
is
Pokemon is
heaven.
Kind of the old man in that, you know, field of collectible.
Yeah, you're right.
You
it's know, the elder millennial. Character. It's
and it's weird because it still seems like a youth thing, but it's been around for 20 years.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's a good point. You're right. It could. Vote nearly drink.
Gen Z does not collect Pokemon, do they? I don't know. Maybe they do, but yeah, I wouldn't want to jump to the assumption that they do.
It is pretty great
more of
to
a
get
millennial
to the
thing.
Yeah.
When you get to the age where you can just kind of like take a deep breath and be like, wait a minute, not everything has to be for me. Oh, good for you. Like that level of like self-awareness, it's like a very good spot to be in.
And then you get older and then you're like, huh, nothing is for me.
Nothing is for me.
I'm
alone.
I remember talking to one of like at a hobbyist, you know, fan expo kind of show. And a guy was selling like collectible cards. And I was asking about the different ones because there are newer games. I asked him, I was like, I don't know too much about them. I just know people like them, so I carry it. And so his entire thought process was, I'll learn enough that I can make money off of it, but I don't need to know enough about it to actually
Welcome
enjoy
to everyone's
it for
the ChatGPT strategy, Roger.
Yeah.
Gen Z is Yu-Gi-Oh, according to JPEG84. But Yu-Gi-Oh's been around for a minute, too.
Yeah, it's been around. No, it's been around since 2005, 2004.
Yeah,
at least in the U.S. It's a Japanese animated animation cartoon series and manga that follows this guy who travels the world competing in these card games with the Yu-Gi-Oh cards, which you can also buy in real life and play like they do in the series and pretend that you're the guy. And it's just it's a collectible card game. I mean, Magic is kind of the genre bearer for that, but I mean, there's so many. They even have the deck thing that holds the cards that they have in the cartoon that's basically a bracelet, and it's just your forearm, and you load the cards in it, and you, it's like having a portable card deck, like, you know, Vegas, where they pull out the
card. Card deck bandolier?
It's not a bandolier. It just sits on your forearm. It straps around, and you just pull it out. It's the weirdest thing, but people, it was a thing for like a hot minute.
This is good to know. So this is the new POG.
It was the new POG 15 years ago.
Got it. Okay. So but POG was relevant. See, this is another thing that I'm starting to do now is I'm actually using older and older references. Like, I'll talk to my, like, if somebody's younger than me, if they're like 10 years younger than me, I'll start saying things like, well, we loved Johnny Carson when I was growing up, which like predates me by some years, right? But I'll do that just to see how much can I get away with. Or like, I'll be like, I had lunch with a college kid the other day, and like, we're talking, you know, I'm getting all like fatherly and stuff. And so I went, we're talking about speech laws, and I went, you know, I did some stuff in the 70s I'm not proud of, but we grow, you know, and we and like, I was born in 1984. There's nothing I did in the 70s that I'm not proud of, but I wanted to see how far could I test this kid where he knows I'm messing with him.
Gosh, that really reminds me of a Hopalong Cassidy episode that I
still want to use the term. That's real Buck Rogers, because that's what old people used to say to me, like when I showed them like a new piece of technology. It's really like straight out of Buck Rogers.
What's funny about the Buck Rogers thing is I remember people saying that, and then Buck Rogers TV show came out, and it became and it suddenly went from an old-fashioned reference to current again, and now it is back to being old-fashioned no matter which one you mean.
I mean, to me, it's still weird.
Buck Rogers is the Uroboro of tech references. It eats its own tail.
When is Buck Rogers going to make its next comeback? It's overdue.
Supposedly there were a bunch of people attached to the project. I don't know where it is, and that was a thing that people signed off on like 7 years ago. So who knows where it is?
It's a tax write off for a streaming service right now.
It could be.
Lost in Space came back.
I mean, this is the thing. You know, people think of old, like, sci-fi. They think Flash Gordon, which was really just a version of Buck Rogers. So Buck Rogers was the granddaddy, literally, and, the whole story.
Literally his granddad?
Oh, no way, because he, you know the whole story behind Buck, like the fictional story, right? He was a World War I vet, and then he got a job, like, with a mining company.
No spoilers
company.
For Buck Rogers, please.
Listen, it's changed so many times.
He got sent forward in time.
Yeah,
to the 25th century.
Oh, okay. Yes, this sounds familiar. Okay,
but it was through
Duck Rogers in the
Duck
24th
Dodgers.
Perhaps.
Duck Dodgers.
It's based on Duck Dodgers. Correct.
Okay. Yes. That's okay. I know that from Babylon 5. Okay.
Yeah. Have you done Buck Rogers in Alienating the Audience?
I have not. I recently sat down and watched Flash Gordon with several of my friends.
Oh, that's fun.
The episode just came out, and my assessment of Flash Gordon was I have never before so badly wanted to do LSD while watching a film I didn't like. It was. Just,
oh wait, the one from the 70s or is from the
the 70s or the film, not the TV show? I thought it was like just a really good costume budget that almost had a plot. Like it was very much a romp. I didn't find a lot of depth in it.
Was that a canon film?
It was, I think so. Actually, it might have been. I do remember thinking like, why did they spend so much money making a 2-hour Queen video?
Mm-hmm. The Queen soundtrack's the best part of that film.
I
say nothing about the Queen soundtrack. It's fantastic.
Yeah, if you look at it as a 2-hour Queen video, it's pretty good.
Hmm.
I like it because it actually encapsulates a lot of that 1930s, 20s kind of like sensibility about it. Like, it's just like oddly fantastical, but not a lot of depth in the story. It's like a lot of it was the bad guys are coming. We need to foil their plot and let's jump in our rocket ship and blast them with our ray guns. And, you know, mm-hmm. That's it. But it was the fantastical element that made it such a fun ride.
Heaton, are you watching The Last of Us?
I am. I have not been able to keep up with it because my I foolishly did not get a VPN. I will get your advice when I get back.
Sure.
In any event, I'm not able to watch it while I'm over here, so I'm only 2 episodes in. Hoping they beat that fungus. But I enjoy the first 2. I think we're up to 4 episodes now.
I think it's 5. Five came out on Friday because they were trying to avoid the Super Bowl.
Better give up. Smart. No, not going to catch up. No point.
They could.
I mean, that's very defeatist of you.
That's why I never watch TV.
Jeez.
I have to catch up with anything. I'm like, I'm
shouldn't
out.
Even
I
watch mean, it.
Eventually the season will end. Then you'll have a chance to catch up.
It's only six episodes, right? Six episodes? Or is it?
No, it's longer than that.
Yeah.
We are episodes. Like, TV's so much better than when I was a kid, back when we were watching Carson. Like the quality's improved. Oh, you can get it whenever you want. You can watch it.
I remember Jack Parr, but yes, go ahead. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's a classic, that Jack Parr. I really enjoy zombies as a genre. Like, I've never quite been able to figure out what I think I like the siege. I think that's the thing I like is there's some weird dormant medieval gene in me that's like, we should be in a tower fighting barbarians right now. Like, that seems to be in there.
Or with your back up just, against the wall kind of situation.
Yeah. Or maybe as we get older, we're just like, I don't know, I'm kind of bored. I wish it was the Old West. Like, I think maybe I don't know what the appeal is, but it definitely works.
I like, it's interesting to say that because it's that the kind of vampire supernatural, like succubus blood. The one I always like is the creature that stalks you, right? It's like a variation of the Most Dangerous Game where you're the prey or you're the... And I like, whether it's aliens or whatever, there's always just kind of like... There's something cool but also very creepy and unsettling about being the object of someone else's fascination.
Mm. Sarah, where would you put The Last of Us versus The Walking Dead?
It's not, I mean, The Last of Us is, you know, they frequently call it like a zombie show, but it's not really that. So it's different in that way. I like it better than The Walking Dead. But I liked The Walking Dead at first.
Right, I remember
after
that.
The first season, I was like, I don't know.
I loved the first season. I liked the second season. And like pretty soon they were in a cave or something. And I was like, I've checked out so long ago. I don't like how is this still going on?
It's repetitive to me.
Yeah.
You know, The Walking Dead did. Where I'm like, now the zombie just came out of nowhere again. I mean, aren't they groaning? Like, wouldn't you kind of like hear them?
Like at some point, don't the bodies that the zombies are just sort of decay to the point where they're just nothing? Like,
you'd think so, yeah.
That's what I like about the Last of Us premise, is that you have another organism, the fungus, taking over, and so it can provide new body material. It makes sense that they would keep going, right? Because it's a living organism.
And it's a life cycle. Eventually, you just turn into a large fungus and you spread spores, and that's it. Like, you're not...
Which is my plan anyway.
What kind you are. Is that your retirement plan, Nathan?
Yeah, that's my plan. Just sink into an overstuffed chair, eventually die, turn into a fungus.
It's a circle of life.
Every spore contains all of your memories, too. I don't know. Oh. I don't know if that's true. I just decided that I like that as a plan.
Seems like my best bet for kids at this point. Belch out spores. So during lockdown, during early lockdown, you know how we all had like lockdown hobbies and whatnot. Mine was I tried to watch a zombie film from every country that's made a zombie film.
Oh wow,
that's amazing.
That was like my version of art house cinema. It was fun. It was a cool. I mean, it was neat. The kind of variations on it. Like Quebec had the best one. Shout out to Quebec. I was kind of anti Quebec until I saw that film, and then I was like, nah, I'm pro Quebec. Yeah. You guys should take over Canada.
Look at your zombie films. You may take over Canada if you go by the zombie films. Yeah.
Is that the one on Netflix?
Yeah, Revenue.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
I started 10 minutes in and then I moved on to something else.
That's
because I have kids.
I don't think I'd show kids that, but that being said, it's like a highbrow zombie film. Like the thing I like about that film more than anything else is they never have to, they just assume the audience is really smart. They never explain anything. So like there's two ladies in there that are looking for their son. And they live together in a house and they never have to go the lesbian couple. Like, you know, you know it, you can figure it out. Right. And there's multiple instances like that where they don't have to do the ... for you. They trust the audience to know what's going on. And it makes it much more engaging. I loved the film. I thought it was terrific.
One of the things that used to bug me about so many blockbuster, like summer blockbuster movies, whereas they would need to insert an exposition explaining the plot up to now as kind of a recap, so you know why they're all jumping into a spaceship or, you know, going out with like swords and swinging it, you know, like to explain, like, well, yeah, I kind of figured when things were blowing up that the world was ending and you needed to save it. I don't know. The Last of Us is pretty good in being very sparing about the explanation. Little bits here and there, which is good.
And it uses its monsters. I know we're calling them zombies, but I guess they're not really zombies. It uses its monsters sparingly. And I think wisely. It's not constantly throwing them at you like Walking Dead started to get in the habit of doing.
Yeah, I have a friend who was like, I'm not into gore. Can I do this? And I was like, there's not really that much. I mean, there's some violence for sure, but it's not really about the infected. It's about the people who aren't infected. That's and, what I told her. Anyway.
Do you think mycologists love it or hate it? Like, do mycologists sit around going, that couldn't happen?
Yeah. I have heard, generally speaking, that the science is good enough. You know, like there's a lot of like, you know, if this happened and if this happened, that may be unlikely, but that it's grounded. But yeah, I don't know if mycologists just sit there looking at it, and every time they go to the monsters, they're like, "Well, it would never grow like that. The spores would go this direction." Or
the mycologist is talking to his mycologist wife over breakfast, and they're like, "Did you see the thing last night? Oh, they completely got hermifungi synopsis wrong. I mean, they said it was green. What are these people doing?
Like those spores would float. Am I right?"
I'm wondering if they would have the exact opposite reaction, or like, yeah, it's a little exaggerated, but you know what? Gets people thinking about fungus, which is cool.
I mean, I'm sure there's like a Neil.
It's our time now. Finally, mycology's on the map.
It gets people afraid of fungus, which is, you know.
Well, which is empowering for a mycologist.
Yeah. Right.
Fear me.
Finally. They should probably sell kind of a Mushroom of the Month Club card, and you get different. Oh, I mentioned this last time. You can get like, you know, a shiitake or button mushrooms or whatever.
More it's rattle. The best. You know what? You're right. It's the best thing that's happened to mycology since fungi puns.
Mm-hmm. Fungus
and the Mushroom among of the Month Club is what I call my haircut with my barber.
So wait, what?
I said Mushroom of the Month Club is what I do with my barber. There's a callback to the,
yes,
the therapist thing.
Oh, man. Now I'm hungry for pizza. That's really what this is.
With mushrooms?
Yes.
I mean, who doesn't like mushroom pizza?
I love mushrooms.
Mushroom haters.
Mushroom haters, yeah.
I don't like pepperoni, though, so you can hate me.
Well, I don't hate you for that.
I was pausing for everyone
for
to
its
hate.
Other reasons.
When I lived
it's
in Astoria, Queens,
why I hate you, Roger.
They had a pizza that was ravioli alla vodka pizza. It was the best thing I've ever tasted. I would jog a lot, and I'd eat one of those whole pizzas. The jogging was just to allow me to eat the pizza. Ravioli alla vodka pizza properly identified the crust as a delivery mechanism for life-threatening amounts of cheese. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. I want life-threatening amounts of cheese, and ravioli vodka pizza delivers.
My niece ordered pizza for lunch yesterday and then proceeded to take the cheese off. And I looked at her mom, and she's like, yeah, she insists on ordering pizza, but she just wants the sauce and the bread. And I was like, well, could you just order it? Like, pizza hold the cheese? And they're like, nope, she wants to have it on there and take it off.
And maybe she always makes the tactile bits part of it for her. Yeah, maybe. Feeling, pulling it off.
Or just residual taste.
And yeah, as a parent, likes a little flavor left behind, but not the full cheese. Yeah,
which is sort of what I do on pepperoni pizza. I like one bite of pepperoni, and then I just take all the pepperoni off, and there's a little salt left.
Mm, interesting.
As a parent,
try that, Roger.
What I'm hearing is that a kid ate, and that's all the parent.
6 year old,
about.
Yeah, 6 year old ate.
6 year old ate. Congrats! I'm happy for them. They've found a way to consistently eat.
Yeah. No,
that's legit.
Yeah. That really was the ultimate.
And the parent gets the leftover cheese, also bonus.
I don't know that they took advantage of that.
That's tragic.
It's unfortunate.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up by thanking the folks on Patreon who support us at patreon.com/DTNS. Thank you to Mwepu for giving us a raise. Already a yearly supporter, and then gave us extra, doubled our salary. Thank you, Mwepu, so much for that. Michael did the same thing. except monthly. So thank you, Michael. Really, really appreciate you. Jennifer also gave us a raise by going yearly, which helps us out. Ryan gave us a raise. Andrea, I think we mentioned Andrea on Friday, but thank you again, Andrea. So thank you for seeing the value in the show and giving a little value back. Also, folks on Twitch are helping us and powering us along to make sure that we're able to keep doing the show there if you like watching us live. Hailstorm 007 followed us. Qualow 1979 resubscribed for the 33rd month. Mitchell Percy for the 22nd month. Flower Girl Wes-Eyed gave us a follow. So did Sir John Card and Allied Justin, Master Christer. Lion Jim Video followed us for the 45th month. Larry in Atlanta for the 29th month. That's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you, Andrew Heaton. It was a pleasure hanging out with you again, my friend.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Next time, we'll have to have you on a Friday when we wear hats.
Ooh, nice. I'll do that.
Yeah, and when you're back domestic side, we can do the top hat thing. Until tomorrow, everyone, have a good day.
Indeed.
Have a good day.
Good day, Internet.
Have a good day.